Hello, I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and welcome to Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. Hot fun in the summertime is how the song goes, but the heat can be dangerous in the wrong circumstances. On tonight's Health Matters, we will be discussing heat-related medical illnesses. As you know, Health Matters is a live weekly show here on Red River Radio where we invite you, our listeners, to join our discussion. We can take your calls tonight or hear your comments at 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet your question or comment to at RRR Public Radio. Let's go ahead and meet our guests that we have with us tonight.
Hi, I'm Mary Alice Roundtree with the Caddo Council on Aging.
Hi, I'm Holly Lyles. I'm the Injury Prevention Coordinator at University Health in Shreveport.
And hello, I'm Dr. Shane Barton. I am an assistant professor of orthopedics at LSU Health Science Center and the medical director for sports medicine at Willis-Knighton.
Thank you all for joining us tonight. So good to have you with us. Let's go ahead and get right to it. You know, health-related illnesses are a big problem this time of year in certain population types. You know, Holly, if you will, let us know what your role is in terms of injury prevention, especially this time of year at University Health.
So I'm involved in education for any type of injury that we see. I do a lot of community education as well as some in the hospital.
So community education, what are the most popular topics that you feel like need to be covered?
We do a lot with impaired driving. ATV safety is one of our newest that we've pushed a lot out on, and child passenger restraint safety.
Child passenger restraint safety. Do you see the summertime being a time where do you see more injuries that are related to some of the things that have to do with travel and heat?
Absolutely. Summertime is our busiest season for trauma, and so we do see a lot of heat-related illnesses, injuries from cars and things like that.
All right. So good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
This is Health Matters. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, your host. The number for your calls or questions on heat-related illnesses tonight, it's 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet at RRR Public Radio. Mary Alice, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you're the executive director for the Caddo Parish Council on Aging.
I am.
If you will, tell us what the Caddo Parish Council on Aging is.
Well, we're the main area agency on aging, and we're the focus point of all issues. Anything that has to do with seniors, we're there. We're the information and referral. Most people think of us just as Meals on Wheels, and we are Meals on Wheels. We serve 1,200 Meals on Wheels meals every day to seniors. And when we're talking about heat-related injuries, we're the ones that are knocking on that door. We're knocking on 1,200 doors every day, and many times we are the people that find the seniors that are in trouble in their homes. We're always currently right now in the fan drive, and so we're giving out a lot of fans, and our main issue during the summertime is checking on our seniors and lecturing to our seniors, including me, to not get in trouble, not to stay out in the yard too long, and to drink lots of fluid. And so also with the fans, we're always telling people to be sure to raise up those windows, because if they're just blowing that hot fan in a hot house with no windows open, they've got a convection oven. So it can almost be more dangerous than ever if they don't have circulation in the house. So we're really out there checking on our seniors, encouraging them to take water intake, and I probably can tell you a little bit more about all that with what we do.
So the fan drive, it's not a drive for popularity. This is a drive to
actually
get fans.
It is a very serious, a very serious drive, and the community has been so good to us. We're able to, this year, we've been able to furnish fans, over 100 to 200 fans to every parish in Northwest Louisiana. So it's not just a fan drive for Caddo Parish, it's a fan drive for the elderly. And it's very important, even people just have a small window unit. You know, it's hot out there. It is very hot out there, and so we're letting seniors even have a fan if they have a small window unit, even two fans. And then we're really checking on those seniors, and that's what's really dear to my heart, is we're making sure that something's not happened to them in the house or in the yard, and it's usually in the yard that something happens.
And so what do you what's your process of determining whether a senior needs, you know, needs attention, needs a fan, needs, you know, some additional help?
Well, many of our drivers, they know the situation that's in the homes when they're delivering. And so if they see a home that they feel like is just too hot, they can tell there's not enough circulation, there's no air conditioning, we're able to get a fan to them. And then we also talk to our seniors. When that heat index gets too high that we've had last week, we encourage our drivers, everyone, to remind the seniors to drink that water, to be sure to get some circulation going in the house, and also be sure to not to get out during the daytime. And especially now during the daytime, it's just too hot. And it's a problem with seniors. A lot of them like to garden. And I got myself in trouble. I was just telling you a minute ago. You know, you stay out in that yard 5 minutes more because you want to get a little bit more of those weeds out of the yard. It can happen so fast. And so we tell them right now during this hot heat index to stay out of the yard until the very, very early morning or the evening. But, you know, even with the morning and the evening, let's talk about mosquitoes. This is very dangerous right now that's happening in the United States. So we're telling them when they're out in the early morning and the late evening, that's when they're going to get mosquito bites. So that's a whole nother issue, too.
Yeah, you know, mosquito-related illnesses are obviously going to peak at this period of time as well. So those who are out in situations where there are going to be mosquitoes, then they need to wear the protection. Either,
exactly.
You know, clothing.
We're kind of telling them two things. We're telling them to stay out of the heat during the daytime, but be beware of that early morning in the garden and that late evening in the garden, too, and with the grass. And so we've been encouraging to remind them about repellent, to have long sleeves on, and to protect themselves in that way, too. But remember, seniors also take a lot of high blood pressure medicine. And that, I think I've got the medical people here with me. That's a very dangerous thing in itself because they can't take the heat like the younger people can.
That was Mary Alice Roundtree. She is the executive director of the Caddo Parish Council on Aging. And I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, your host tonight for Health Matters, a live show here on Red River Radio where we invite you, our listeners, to join the discussion. And you can call us and ask a question about our topic tonight, which is heat-related illnesses. The number for your call is 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet your question or comment to @RRRPublicRadio. Dr. Barton, welcome back to Health Matters.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So from the physician standpoint, I understand you work a lot with athletes. You work with in the sports medicine field. When you hear the term heat-related illness, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I mean, the traditional thing that you know, at the beginning of each school year, we try to get together with our coaches in the local parishes, the high schools, and the athletes as well as their families to really try to re-educate each year because there's a lot of kids moving up a grade. They're going to start a new sport, a different type of training, and it's a time where we do pre-participation physicals to kind of, you know, check people's health. Once everything kind of starts to come together in the late summer or early fall, we'll talk to these kids. The first thing is usually football practice. A lot of times it's two-a-day football practice. And, you know, it used to be a thing where, you know, it was if you're going to be weak, or something like that, then they would put you away. They would keep you away from water. Well, over these last 10 to 20 years, there's been a real re-education with the coaches of the dangers that are associated with heat illness. And it just so happens that football is one of those things that kind of starts off the school year. It's still very hot. The humidity is very high around here. The heat index, you know, heat and humidity combined is still very high. And so, you know, we really try to bang into the coaches and our athletic training staff how to prevent really prevention is the key to avoid injury, these heat-related illnesses.
And so the heat-related illnesses, let's go through those a little bit. What should coaches and parents be looking for if an individual's starting to get too hot?
Well, there's a whole spectrum.
Okay.
And really when we start talking about this, we're talking about the body's ability to kind of regulate its temperature. And there's a lot of things that affect that. Just like she said, you know, the blood pressure medicines, a lot of patients take beta blockers or diuretics. They affect the ability for the cardiac output to change. They affect the fluid balance in the body. And so those can be things that are risk factors. And so, you know, really when we start talking about these, it's a spectrum. And the earliest things, people can have swelling in their hands or feet when they're working. You know, these are just little. You can have heat rash. You know, people call it, you know, like where you're sweaty and you have these red papules that kind of come up. I mean, those are real mild type of things. The body's still regulating its temperature. You then start to get into where you have large muscle groups that can cramp, the quadriceps, you know, the back of the legs, the hamstrings, your gastroc, even your chest or arm muscles. When that starts to happen, that's kind of considered the first phase of true heat-related illness, and those are called heat cramps. Those are specific. Those are different than someone who's just cramping from exertion. Okay, these are related to the body temperatures not being regulated right, and maybe the athlete or patient has depleted their fluids or their sodium or electrolyte balances off. If that continues, and the signs for that will really just be, you know, they're tired, they're a little lightheaded, and they're having cramping. The next step is heat exhaustion. Okay, so when someone reaches a heat exhaustion, you know, they have nausea, vomiting. You know, the skin will still be kind of moist, but it might be very cool. They'll still be sweating a little bit, but they're you know, the body's not sweating normally, and the temperature goes up over 100 degrees. Okay, but their mentation, their ability to talk to you, is still normal. Okay, so that's the key. Because the most deadly and truly deadly thing that can be found from a heat-related illness is heat stroke. And the kind of the signs of that are a body temperature that can go above 104 degrees Fahrenheit and abnormal mentation. And especially in the elderly, you know, it may not take much to go from just being kind of lightheaded or dizzy to a full, you know, disoriented state. And if you find someone who is in a very hot environment, particularly, you know, if it's an elderly person or someone who's ill, hot environment, and they show signs of they're confused, they're pale, their skin can actually be very red and dry, they're no longer sweating, you know, that can truly be a life-threatening emergency.
Yeah, and I can imagine in a kid, you know, a kid with a football helmet on. You know, how are you going to assess mental status in a kid who's just, you know, just looking at you? You know, may be struggling, things along those lines. So being proactive about these issues seems to be very important.
Absolutely. Well, and the best thing is, you know, especially in situations where you've got coaches or you've got drivers that know these patients or you've got athletic trainers that know the athletes, they already know the baseline.
Right.
You know, and so they'll know if someone's acting a little bit strange or, you know, someone's supposed to run a certain play and they end up on the other side of the field. You know, I mean, those little things can happen, and they're, you know, it's dependent on the people around them to watch and protect.
That was Dr. Shane Barton. He is the director of sports medicine in the Willis-Knighton Health System, also an orthopedic surgeon, and works a lot with our athletes in the sports medicine field. This is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. The number for your questions or comments about our topic tonight, which is heat-related illnesses, is 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet a question at RRR Public Radio. Holly, from University Health, let me move to you for a little bit, and let's talk about kids left in cars. I think you mentioned a statistic that almost 40 kids die every year because they're left in vehicles. I believe you mentioned that 26 deaths have occurred already in 2016, three here in Louisiana. And you mentioned that the first child was actually died in January, and the outside temperature was only like 52 degrees. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, the importance of or protecting these kids.
That's right. All of those statistics are scary, but that's our reality. The thing with kids, they don't regulate their temperature the way adults do. They get hotter quicker. And so even those 50-degree temperatures can affect them greater than it will with an adult. The temperature inside of a car rises about 20 degrees in that first 10 minutes. Within an hour of being outside in just a car sitting outside in the heat, it can rise almost 50 degrees. So those kids are getting really, really hot sitting in there. On top of if they're in their car seats, car seats now are made to where they come around and they kind of envelope the kids. And so the air is not circulating, so it can get even hotter sitting in that car seat. So we just need to be really mindful of children being in there. There's several tips that we have to not leave your kids in cars. One of my favorites is put a stuffed animal in the car seat when the child's not in it. And that way, when the child gets in it, you take that stuffed animal and you put it in the front seat because it can remind you. There's no blame we're trying to place on anyone for ever leaving their kid in their car. Things happen. Your routine can change. You may not normally be the one that takes the child places, and so just out of habit, you go about your normal routine and you don't think to get your child out. So we just really encourage parents in different ways to remember that their children are in their cars. You can always put your cell phone, a shoe, your purse. I've had one of our doctors tell us he puts his briefcase in the back seat every time he has his child with him. It always goes in the front seat when he's alone. So just something extra that helps remember, this isn't my normal routine.
The cell phone comes to mind because it might actually keep the parents from texting and driving, so you're going to protect the child as well.
Even more so.
Let the kid play on the phone while you drive. You're not going to leave your phone in your car. So
right.
Any other tips that come to mind?
Especially if it's not in your routine, if you're taking your child to daycare or to a sitter, always have the sitter or the daycare call if someone doesn't drop your child off. Or if you're not in the habit of taking it, call in and check in with your spouse. Hey, we just left. Everything's been fine. Things like that, just to jog your memory. So you know if that call doesn't come in, something's not right.
Do you know if there are institutional protocols in place? I get a call if my child is late for school or if they don't come to school. Are there institutional protocols in place for these places to call a parent if a child doesn't show up and they're expected to show up, or is that something the parents have to take upon themselves?
Really, the parents need to take it upon themselves. Each institution is going to be different. They're going to have their own protocol, so there's not one standard. I know my school is the same way. They call if we're 5 seconds late for school. But daycare centers are totally set up different, and so there's no standard there for that.
And I realize I may be catching you off guard, and if Mary Alice or Dr. Barton, if you know anything along those lines, are there any indications that the automobile industry is taking any steps to detect temperatures inside cars and perhaps motion detectors or sound detectors or anything that could alarm the environment that there is a live individual inside a car at a certain temperature? It's with Fitbits and everything we have these days, you can figure out pretty much what you're anyone's health status is from, a world away, it seems like. Are you guys aware of any technology that could be moving in the direction of detecting, difficult conditions in cars with children?
Some
animals are killed as well, right?
Right, I mean, animals can be just, as well.
Yeah.
Car seat manufacturers have actually already started doing this. My car seat I can put an app on my phone, and when it detects that there's weight that hasn't moved and it senses that the car hasn't moved after a certain amount of time, and I can't remember how long it is, it'll send me a notification, and I've never had it to send me the notifications. I don't remember all the details. And there is one car manufacturer that is working on, and I can't remember who it is right yet. It hasn't come out yet, but in the next few years it's supposed to. But it's a weight sensor that's in the car that it detects once the car hasn't moved for so long. It will send notifications that something is there.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, it would seem, fairly simple to have motion detectors or weight sensors, sound sensors, and, maybe for the car alarm to go off, or something along those lines to trigger a response. Or even, probably even a 911 response could be triggered, in those situations.
I've seen people, too, also leave very elderly persons in the car because it's hard to get them out, maybe get the wheelchair out. And I've seen that occasionally. We've not had any deaths like that, but I've seen that actually happen. They want to run into the store, and they leave mom or grandmother in that car, and she's not really able to get out of that car in that same situation.
This is listener-supported Red River Radio, and our show tonight is Health Matters, and the topic is heat-related illness. You can call with questions or comments to 1-800-552-8255. 8502, or you can tweet a question at RRR Public Radio. And I'm going to go ahead and go to a question that was sent via the internet. And the question was, if there's an increased risk of heat-related illness, we talked about certain medications regarding antihypertensives, but Dr. Barton, young athletes that are on ADHD medications, are there risks of heat-related illnesses? Does their risk profile change if they are on some of those medications?
Well, you know, each one of those, you know, we start talking about things like Ritalin and medications that are used, that are commonly used to treat high school age kids. There are some risks that go along with those medications. As far as the heat-related risk, it's not so much specific heat, but they can have cardiovascular effects, and they can affect the patient's ability to regulate their cardiovascular status. So cardiac output, you know, if your blood pressure is going down as the blood vessels are dilating, the body's ability to close those off. You know, many of those medications essentially act as amphetamines, and so those can be cardiac stimulants. Okay, and so, you know, if you combine that, also things like creatine, you know, other types of supplements that a lot of particularly high school athletes utilize, you know, those can affect the body's ability to auto-regulate temperature, particularly by affecting kidney function or cardiac output. So, I mean, those are definitely things that have to be taken into account. The NCAA, I take care of Centenary, and Centenary is a Division III school through the NCAA. There's a very nice sports medicine handbook that is put out and updated every few years, and it actually addresses medications and heat-related illnesses and has recommendations along those lines to, you know, some medicines that should be completely avoided. You know, if someone has recently been ill and is on and has infection, particularly like a staph infection, a skin, and like in a wrestler, then they advise them to avoid, you know, prolonged exposures to heat and things like that, just because of the stress that's already on the body. So it's a, you know, every medication that you take, even things like ibuprofen, Motrin, those kind of things can affect renal function, even if it's transient. And if you're very dehydrated and are taking high doses of anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs, you know, that can lead to kidney problems, things called acute tubular necrosis, ATN, or even, you know, full-blown kidney failure. So, I mean, all these things need to be considered by coaches, trainers. It's really nice to have athletic trainers at a lot of these schools that can help.
Yeah, I understand, you know, with heat, severe heat-related illness, the muscles actually start to break down, right? You have this syndrome called rhabdomyolysis, right? And so if you're already on medications that are going to affect renal function, that's a recipe for fairly severe renal problems.
That's right. The actually, creatine kinase, you have something called CK, which is one of the, it's an enzymatic breakdown that occurs in the muscle, and it's a sign you can measure these levels in the body. And the levels should be, you know, I mean, they can be in the 50s, they can be up to 500 sometimes, and you'll find people who have exertional rhabdomyolysis, which means death and breakdown of the muscle, that those CK levels can get to be 20 or 30, become Coca-Cola colored. You can have decreased urine output, and you can actually have permanent, you know, renal damage, even in young athletes. So if they get to that point, you know, that has to be monitored, and occasionally emergent dialysis has to be utilized for those, that very thing.
This is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. The number for your calls or comments on our topic tonight, heat-related illness, is 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet a question at RRR Public Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Randall Brewer. We have orthopedic surgeon and director of sports medicine with Willis Knight and Dr. Shane Barton here with us tonight. We also have Holly Lyles with University Health, as well as Mary Alice Roundtree. She is the executive director on the Caddo Parish Council on Aging. We've been talking quite a bit about heat-related illnesses and some of the factors that may predispose some individuals to having problems with the excessive heat this time of year. The topic of drugs came up recently in a question, and just reading from the patient education information that is provided free on the Mayo Clinic's website, thinking about drugs, certain medications can affect your body's ability to stay hydrated and respond appropriately to heat. Antihypertensives we talked about, such as beta blockers or diuretics, but as well as antihistamines that are used for allergies, drugs that are used for anxiety tranquilizers, some other drugs that are used in the psychiatry area, antipsychotics, as well as drugs that are used recreationally or illegal drugs such as cocaine, methamphetamines, naturally increase the core temperature by providing that brain stimulation that increases temperature. Mary Alice, when your guys deliver something to an elderly individual and you have a high index of suspicion that, you know, something could predispose them to an injury, what is the process of contacting the family? Is that something that you have to get the person's permission for? Or let's say if they live alone, what is your process of getting help to these individuals?
Well, you know, that's what's so wonderful about the Meals on Wheels program. I was just training two new volunteers today, and I was telling them, you know, how to deliver the meal and what boxes they were going to pick up and what they were going to do. And then I got to my favorite topic, and that is if no one answers the door. And so that's when we really kick in, and that's when I get most excited about our program, because we're out there checking on them all the time. And our protocol is that if no one answers the door and no one has told us that they're not going to be home, then we start into the process, and we ask the driver or the volunteer driver to call us and tell us that they can't get Miss Jones to the door. If they can't get Miss Jones to the door, then we call them. If we can't get in touch with them, then we call the emergency contact. And we do have an emergency contact on every single person that gets in our program. If we can't get into emergency contact, we go full-blown into action. And we're not worried. We don't ask permission. And we call the Sheriff's Department. And the Sheriff's Department does a safety check. And if we really feel like something is wrong, and many times our drivers that really know these clients, they can sense when something is wrong. The door's unlocked, maybe the door's ajar. We don't have them go in for safety reasons, but we go ahead and call 911. And the city is fabulous about that, and they'll do a safety check for us. And believe me, we are the ones that have found so many of the seniors. And so it's real important. And when I tell people about the Meals on Wheels, we deliver the meal, and we deliver a smile, and we deliver hope, but we deliver that safety check. And not only just in the heat, but when it's really, really bad weather, when it's cold, we're there again to save the thing. Because so many of our seniors, when they get cold, they're very worried about those electric bills. And so they'll do the forbidden thing, and they'll go onto their gas stove, and they'll turn on all those burners on the gas stove to stay warm. And then we've got a real problem. And so it's just important. I want to mention one other thing that we're really encouraging, because I love the high-tech thing that you just talked about. Oh, I love. That's going to be so important for our seniors to stay at home, all of these telephone apps and everything like that. But we really encourage seniors that are living at home to get the emergency helpline, okay? And that's become so advanced. And if you come through the Caddo Council on Aging, it's just a pass-through, and it's a great savings. You don't spend the money. We don't make anything on them. But now they have the medical alerts that have the GPS on it, and so you can wear that pendant and you can go out in your backyard, and if you get in trouble in that backyard and you start to feel dizzy, you can push that button. You can be in the car and get in trouble, and it's all through GPS. And we just had a lady recently that has a farm in Kichai, and she said, Meryl, could they find me in Kichai? And so I called the company that we have, and they said, yes, we could find her in Kichai if she fell out. And so we really encourage seniors to, most of the time, so many times people wait to get that medical alert when they've already fallen or they've already gotten in trouble. But it's also a great just safety feature, like if something happened or if they felt like they were being there was a danger factor in the house, they don't even have to answer the telephone anymore.
And so when you say this is passed through, is this something, let's say an elderly individual who doesn't actually need Meals on Wheels,
They can just call us, and they get the discount price for the medical alert if they come through the Caddo Council on Aging or the Bossier Council on Aging or the Webster Council on Aging. It's a statewide program, but it's just such a fabulous protection, and I'm so big on it again, because so many times the accidents sometimes happen outside when they're away from that telephone, and they're again in the garden or they're mowing the grass or they're just out, and so all they have to do is they feel the slight bit of things, they can just push that button and help is on the way.
Now, is there a charge for the GPS function on that button?
Every single one is a different price, and you can't ask me exactly what it is because I don't have my cheat sheet in front of me. And it's mainly the information and referral people that do the things, but they can just give us a call at 676-7900, and they can find out about the medical alert. But I'm just a huge if I was not living with my husband and I'm a little older, I would have a medical alert. Because if something happened to me, especially if somebody broke into my house, they're not going to let me go over to my alarm system and say, could you just wait 1 second? I have an alarm system right over here, and push that button. So I'm really big on, like you are, prevention is to prevent these accidents with our seniors. And I'm also very excited. I kind of feel like we're back 20 years ago. I'm beginning to see a lot of people carry umbrellas. Have y'all noticed that? People are out carrying umbrellas in the heat. And what a wonderful idea. Let's just go back to that 20 years ago when we didn't have air conditioning and we did carry umbrellas.
Or a parasol, right?
Parasols, yeah.
Yeah, this is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. The number for your questions or comments on our topic tonight is 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet at RRR Public Radio. And the topic tonight is heat-related illness. Dr. Barton, we've got a listener who has submitted a question, and this listener is an umpire and has had problems with working games in excessive heat. And someone had suggested to the umpire that he drink pickle juice prior to the games. He said he tried it once. It seemed to help. Is this a coincidence, or is there something unique about pickle juice that seems to work well?
Now, the unique thing about pickle juice is that it is a high-sodium liquid, and it has a taste that some people really like, and so they can tolerate it. So if someone is low in sodium or hyponatremic, then pickle juice can be useful. There have been studies that have looked at exercise-associated muscle cramping to see if pickle juice works, and it does not any better than water or rest. That's for exercise-associated muscle cramping, not heat-induced, okay? So whenever someone starts talking about activity, and umpires, especially umpires like the home plate that have to wear very large protected on their chest, police officers who are out in the sun, they're wearing their bulletproof vest. I mean, when these people are going to be doing these activities for over an hour, especially over 2 hours, then they have to use something other than water to replenish. So pickle juice is an option. There's no magic to it. It's certainly no better than your sports drinks, okay? So, you know, people like it because it's kind of a home cure and it does have a place. But for most kids that are doing activities that are really highly intense, or young adults or even adults, if they're doing something for an hour, even up to 2 hours, water is still your best replacement, assuming you're adequately hydrated before and you've been eating a decent, or healthy diet. Once someone does an hour and a half, 2 hours of intense activity, or if they're doing it second time, then water can become, not enough. You may have to actually replace some of the carbohydrates, the electrolytes like sodium. And that's where things like these sports drinks and even pickle juice can come into play.
And so if heat cramps actually occur, then the electrolyte replacement is definitely indicated at that point, because your body is giving you the signal that something, is evolving in terms of the illness.
Yeah, but even in heat cramps, it depends. Water is still your number one go-to, okay, especially if that comes on. Now, you have to pay attention to your electrolyte balance. Again, if somebody's having heat cramps after 2 or 3 hours of activity, then pickle juice is an option. So are those sports drinks. But really, rest, getting in the shade, just putting, if somebody has an umbrella, let's say you're at Cargill, there's tons of soccer fields. There's not a lot of shade. I mean, there's some, but if someone is in a lot of heat, someone's going to have an umbrella around there. Get an umbrella over them. Use water, cool them off. If you've got a water hose available, especially if someone starts having signs of heat exhaustion, they're nauseated, they're throwing up, but they're still mentally with it, have them lie down, cool them off with a spray of water. I mean, you're trying to reduce their body temperature. That does not require a call to 911 immediately, okay? If, it's early stages, they're still with it, they're just feeling kind of, nauseated or something. But the minute someone shows signs of confusion in those situations, that deserves a 911 phone call.
911 and ice.
Oh yeah, so
ice in the armpits, ice in the groin. Yeah, the full protocol, right? You're
talking
about.
And I have a question. Why do they tell them to raise their legs up?
Yeah. Okay. So you know, one of the things is the raising the legs occurs because your body's ability to control how the blood vessels dilate, you lose that ability, and so people will get lightheaded and pass out. Generally, for heat-related syncope and those kind of things, it doesn't help as much. That's more like a, what we call a syncopal episode. Someone gets scared, they pass out. It's caused the blood vessels dilate, so the blood flow to the brain shuts down or it goes way down. They pass out. So you're raising the leg to drive more blood up into the upper body. Okay, so in a heat-related illness, you know, the things are cool the patient, and what you're trying to do. The way you cool the patient is you get the blood to cool down. And the places where you have the closest access to the vascular system are the groin, the axilla, around the neck. Those are the places where there's not a lot of muscle between the ice bag and the blood system. And so that's why we use those for cooling.
Another question. Holly, I'll ask you this question. A listener is asking, does sunscreen help protect from heat exhaustion by keeping the skin cooler? Any information that you give to individuals regarding sunscreen? Obviously, it's a good idea.
Absolutely.
To prevent sunburns.
It's to prevent that sunburn. So it's the prevention of the sunburn that's actually what's going to help you out. When your skin's sunburned, it can't cool down as fast. Sweating doesn't help as much, things like that. So you want to prevent that sunburn. So anytime you're outside, you should always be putting sunscreen on.
All right. And another question in your direction, Dr. Barton. It's a parent is asking, has a kid in sports, and has heard that giving them chocolate milk after practice is a good idea, is better than giving them water or Gatorade, or would they likely get sick off the milk right after exertion? So another sort of home remedy oriented question. Any data on post exercise milk products?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, believe it or not, a lot of people who are into things like high intensity interval training, CrossFit type things, or these boot camps. You know, there's been a number of studies in the sports physiology arena for the optimal post sports drink, what proteins, what fats, what carbohydrates. And it turns out that if someone is not lactose intolerant, okay, of course, then chocolate milk is an excellent post-workout drink. It is not a good electrolyte replenishment, but it is good for proteins and for carbohydrates. And chocolate has more carbohydrates, that's why. It is not particularly better than, say, Gatorade. The Florida Gators came up with this and engineered this, and there's a lot of different ones that are out there, but these have been tweaked. Those are scientifically tweaked for people that are replenishing electrolytes and carbohydrates. So chocolate milk is absolutely a good thing, and in fact, I use it in the mornings after I work out. It's one of the things I take.
I think there are probably a lot of kids out there that might agree with you. So that's good news for them. This is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio, and you can call with questions or comments about heat-related illness to 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet your question at RRR Public Radio. Going through some of the sports-related issues regarding heat illness, Dr. Barton, I understand with coaching there's this concept of prehydration as well as a concept of acclimation in terms of the heat. If, you know, for the parents out there, we had a parent call in that has a kid in sports, what should they be asking their coaches about? What are your recommendations for our children before practice in terms of prehydration? And should they be asking their coaches, especially this time of year, what are your plans for acclimation or acclimatization regarding these practices?
Well, and I think, you know, one of the great things, the coaches in general, not just in this area, but in others, but particularly around here, over these past, you know, I've been here in practice now for 12 years, and I've just seen this, there's a huge interest. These coaches have the best interest of the kids at heart. And so the problem is what you end up with is you get young, aggressive, teenage athletes who aren't willing to admit any weakness, and they'll get themselves in trouble. And that's where you depend on these coaches and trainers to kind of keep an eye out. As far as acclimation, there definitely is a time period. If someone lives in a cool environment with low humidity, and then they come here to Shreveport and try to run a marathon, I mean, it can wipe them out. Whereas if they came and spent some time, it usually at least 72 hours for the body to begin to acclimate. It's just like altitude. Okay, the body has a physiologic response to the heat. For us living here, it's not that big a deal. But if you've been hanging out on the couch all summer, you've enjoyed your time off after your junior year in high school, now you're a senior, you're in two-a-day football practice, and you've not been training, you're gonna be at risk. And so, whereas the person that's been training all summer is really going to be more acclimatized. So the coaches have to kind of take the lowest common denominator. They have to set their program, you know, to try to take care of all the kids. And so, you know, if they see someone falling behind, they can adjust maybe what they're doing with them, let them get in the cool, drink more. Prehydration is big, especially there's a huge triathlete running, biking communities here, and even swimming. Even swimming, you can become very dehydrated while swimming. I participated this past weekend in the River Cities Triathlon. Fantastic. Runners from 20 states came to participate. And one of the warnings is when the water temperature is over 90, 92 degrees, you can dehydrate in a half-mile swim. And so, you know, you have to even be careful there. Prehydration with at least 16 to 20 ounces of water, okay, is great before any intense exercise that's going to last an hour or so. As you're doing it, most people recommend about 4 to 6 cups of water per hour. You can get it all at one time. You can slug it at once if you tolerate that, or it's better really to kind of, you know, take it slow. If you go over 2 hours of very intense exercise, that's where you have to start doing the more electrolyte and carbohydrate replacement.
And in terms of, you know, prehydration, also, should these athletes be avoiding things that are going to dehydrate them, such as alcohol and caffeine, you know, before these events?
Absolutely. You know, caffeine is alcohol, absolutely. Of course, teenagers should not be having alcohol, but I understand how things can happen. Adults that are participating in these high-intensity things should also avoid excessive use of alcohol. We talked about recreational drugs, and really, if you think about it, that's probably the most used recreational drug in the country is alcohol. Things like caffeine. Caffeine actually kind of goes back and forth. Excessive caffeine can cause dehydration, but you know, there's been a lot of studies that look at it. It's not quite as intense as it was once thought to be, and so caffeine. Alcohol is much more of a problem for dehydration than something like coffee or sodas.
You know, it's interesting. You see it at a number of these events that, you know, it's promoted as something, you know, maybe to enjoy after a race or even during a race. It's it can be comical, but in certain health conditions, it can be a serious hazard.
It can be. Well, are you talking about like alcohol? Or,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So at a lot of races, and in fact, at many races that are around the country, you'll see that afterwards, people will use beer as a post exertion recovery drink, and it actually also has, you know, it's got a lot of water, and so that's the benefit of drinking beer. It's better than drinking nothing, but excessive alcohol. Okay, particularly if you're drinking. Grain spirits, you know, or whiskey or those kind of things. Those can really cause more problems. Beer after a run, as long as you're 21 or older, is probably safe, assuming you're otherwise healthy.
All right. Mary Alice, you know, let's stay on the alcohol just for a moment, if you will. What is it that you tell your Meals on Wheels people if they notice an alcohol problem in some of the people that they may deliver meals to? Because, you know, it's a very common problem. We have to, you know, realize that even in the elderly population, alcoholism can be a problem, predispose them to maybe not having normal judgment. And certainly excessive alcohol use is going to predispose individuals to dehydration, as well as if you're drinking and you're out in the sun. It's what's called a vasodilator. So it's just about the same as being on a blood pressure medicine that's going to make your blood vessels, you know, not constrict as well and keep blood in. So what is it that you've encountered, if anything, regarding, you know, alcohol in the elderly regarding heat?
Well, we really have not gotten into that too much. Okay. You know, we really don't notice that. We deliver early in the mornings, you know, and so if there's alcohol used, probably it's more in the afternoon. We're really more concerned. What we've seen a lot, because we have the Aging and Disability Resource Center, so we do that Medicare Part D plan comparisons, and I think you'll probably agree with me, our seniors are on too much medication. It's just unbelievable. They bring in a Ziploc bag, and they have no idea of why they're taking all the medication either. And they say, well, I just take the green pill, the blue pill. And don't you agree that there's so many interactions between all those pills? That's what we get the most concerned with. What is your feeling on that?
Absolutely. We call that polypharmacy. And polypharmacy, you know, the patients, particularly with medicine having specialized the way that it has, patients will see an endocrinologist for their diabetes, or they'll see a urologist, they'll see a gastroenterologist, they'll see an orthopedic surgeon for aches and pains, they'll see a neurosurgeon, they'll see, you know, all these different doctors, and each doctor says, oh, you've got this. You look at the list of medicine, you say, well, you really need this. And that's where we depend on, you know, the primary care providers. I mean, each physician should take that to heart and try to limit things that can potentially cause harm to their patient. But really, the primary care physicians do, I find, an excellent job of kind of managing those medications and trying to limit it. But not everybody has it.
What would you suggest when we see those huge bags of drugs come in with maybe 15, 16 pills that they're taking, and then you combine that with the heat? That's what our big concern is. And of course, we can't do any kind of judgment because we're not medical.
Right.
You know? But we do see just a lot of drugs.
And there are patients that may require those kind of medications depending on what illnesses and things. But this is something, if the patients have no idea what they're taking, and if particularly if there's some risk that they may be taking them on the wrong schedule, then the best thing is to get maybe an associated family member, somebody who's can go with that patient to the doctor and just take them all and say, we'd just like to schedule an appointment with you know, family practice or internal medicine or their primary care doctor, gerontologist, who will say, let's just go over all your meds and see why you're taking these. That's part of taking care of the patients, and I think you'll find most doctors would be glad to sit down and do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, certainly, family members should be advocates for, you know, these patients and say, you know, doctor, you know, why are we taking all these medications, and go through each medication individually and see what can be perhaps weaned and discontinued or streamline the process.
Yeah, for the elderly, we were talking about anti-inflammatories. You know, there was a time in the late 90s where it was one of the leading causes of death from gastrointestinal bleeding, because so many people were taking anti-inflammatories and they were having these kind of almost silent bleeds within the gastrointestinal system.
Correct.
And then they would be anemic. They would lose all their blood, not know it, and then they end up with a heart attack or something. And so, you know, there's been a big push, particularly in the elderly, to be more careful with medications in the medical field.
Well, that's great, because we do notice that, you know. And then we also advocate so much when the seniors do go to medical appointments to take another person with them, because they do get very confused, and then they're not listening to what's being said, and then they're also not being listened to said how the medicine is administered. And we've had a lot of discussion with University Health too, with the prescriptions are beginning to have larger lettering on it, but in the past the lettering was so small, and then the little brochure that goes with the thing is even smaller. And so I've noticed at some of the pharmacies now the lettering is getting much larger on the bottles, and so we advocate for that too, because they really can't see what they're taking because it's so small.
I've had patients come into my office with a large print Reader's Digest that has an advertisement for a medicine. They say, hey, I'm taking this, I can finally read about this, this is the medicine you wrote for me. And you realize I may not have shared with them in detail what this medicine's doing, what it's for, and you know, I mean, that's something we owe to our patients.
Right, and I think with the baby boomers, don't you agree, coming in so fast, so furious, that there's just such a huge, it's just like all the schoolhouses that were my age, you know, in the 50s, because this huge group is coming in, and it's my group that's coming in, and so I'm hoping there's going to be more demands from that group. I've even read so many articles how the pharmacies are being rearranged now more, that the products that the seniors are looking at are down lower. They're more eye level, so that the seniors can see it, and the lettering is becoming larger for us baby boomers.
We have time for maybe one or two more questions. This is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. The number for your calls or questions is 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet a question at RRR Public Radio. You know, Dr. Barton, a number of these medications actually lead to more medications. So if the patient's on a drug for arthritis and they get heartburn from that, so they're also on an acid blocker and a drug for arthritis, or they get a high heart rate from a blood pressure medicine, so they're on a medicine that also slows the heart rate in addition to the medicine that might, you know, help them with their blood pressure. So these things can get out of control really quickly.
They can, you know, and I think, you know, as a physician, you know, I mean, I every physician I know, the residents we train, the doctors I work with in different specialties, I mean, you're in a pain management field, you know, Dr. Brewer, and you're there to make people's lives better, either alleviate pain, restore function. That's why I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I enjoy those things, and medications are one way we do that. But, you know, the patient has some responsibility to making sure their physician knows what other medicines they're on, but the physician prescribing those medicines has a responsibility to make sure that they're doing no harm to the patient by prescribing it.
I've got a question, because I have a lot of seniors ask about grapefruit juice and orange juice. So can you tell us a little bit about that on different medications?
Yeah, well, a lot of those have to, you know, those things, the biggest things, they affect the acidity of the stomach, which can affect absorption of medications. And that's why, you know, it just depends on which medicine, but you know, some people will take things with milk because they think it coats the stomach and makes it go down better. Some people will take things with, you know, with put it in peanut butter because it's easier to swallow because of the taste of the pill or something, you know. But there are things, tomato juice, orange juice, grapefruit juice, things that affect acidity can slow down absorption for certain medicines in the upper, like in the stomach, in the upper small intestine. And so there should be a warning that's pretty prominent, like, you know, take this with food or take 1 hour before a meal, you know, with sips of water. So that's a good question.
Holly, from the standpoint of what, you know, we should be looking for in terms of children and as it's related to preventing these injuries during the summer, are there any points that you would bring up in terms of protecting children from, you know, not only just heat and sun, but other things that they could be getting into during the summer?
Oh, absolutely. Our main thing is just watch them. I think we forget, because we've become so advanced, that these are still children, and we let them do a lot of things more unsupervised than what we would have done, or we did things when we were kids and we lived through it, so we let our kids do it, and the world's just not the same. So I think supervision is number one, especially around pools, things like that. As far as sports go, we need to know what to be watching for. I mean, heat-related illnesses, they're 100% preventable, but they're also 100% survivable if you know what you're looking for. So they need to know the symptoms to be watching for, the confusion, the muscle cramps, number one. I mean, if you catch it early and you start treatment then, you can prevent these fatal things from happening. As far as being in cars, we're in cars a lot more during the summer, so they need to make sure they're in the right child passenger restraint system, be it the car seat, the booster seat. We let our kids out of booster seats a lot sooner than they should. Seatbelts actually are designed to work on people that are 4'9 and above. Not very many children are 4'9, but they're not in booster seats either. And so if we have them in a regular seat too early, that seatbelt's coming across their neck, and there's injuries that can come from that if there's in a crash. So those are my main ones.
What about eat? Remember back when we were little, we were always told we couldn't eat and then get in the pool.
That's such a great old wives' tale. It has absolutely nothing to do with it.
That's what my kids tell me.
That's what my grandmother always told me.
And I always say, they can't get in the pool. They just ate.
You know, one thing that does come to mind, you know, you mentioned supervising children, you know, in areas where there may be old appliances. Right. Or abandoned cars, abandoned sheds, things along those lines, places where there's not good air circulation. Parents should really be on the watch out if they're just, you know, you mentioned, you know, the good old days. In the good old days, mothers in particular would tell their kids, you know, get out of the house, come back when it gets dark, you know, and dinner will be ready. But nowadays, I mean, there are just so many hazards out there.
Right, and especially things like the old appliances. Kids can get trapped in these places and not be able to get out. And you can see the heat-related illnesses come from that. Even in houses with your senior citizens, they may be staying with their grandparents. Their temperature regulation is totally different. A lot of our seniors keep their houses warmer.
Oh, they do. They keep them very warm.
And so you have to watch for them. They'll get stuck in closets where there's not good circulation, and you already have a house that's too warm. Those temperatures get really, really hot in there.
That's very interesting, because we do have a lot of seniors that have their grandkids with them, and those houses are hot, and the seniors have sweaters on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The one issue that comes up is clothing. We had a caller who called in regarding clothing, and the Mayo Clinic's website mentions to wear loose-fitting, lightweight, light-colored clothing. Excessive, dark, or tight clothing holds in heat. That's what you want to wear when you're, you know, in the mountains, right, when you're snow skiing, but not in the middle of the summer. One question that came in was that, what about Coolmax-type fabrics that are supposed to be breathable and help to cool the body? Dr. Barton, have you heard of these fabrics, and do they help?
Yeah, absolutely they do, because the number one way that as someone who's exerting themselves manages their body temperature is through sweating, and it's actually an evaporative cooling. That's why if it's a high humidity environment and the sweat on your skin is not evaporating into the air because the air is already saturated with moisture, that's why you're at a higher risk. And so clothes that maintain or seal off the skin can really increase the risk of heat-related illness. Coolmax, other kind of things like that, you know, a lot of the Under Armour type garments, the reason they're worn by the military and things is because they can be worn tightly against the skin and still allow the skin to quote breathe, which really just means to be able to sweat and evaporate that sweat away. But you know, when you start talking about you're going to go on a hike for the afternoon, well, believe it or not, wearing a long sleeve, very light, thin fabric, loose fitted, that is light colored, will keep your body cooler than wearing no shirt at all or shirt sleeves, you know, just short shirt sleeves. So that's why you see a lot of really experienced people who are hiking and things. They're trying to avoid sunburn, because when the skin is burned, it cannot regulate itself. It doesn't sweat as well as we talked about earlier. But those light-colored clothing, loose-fitted clothing, for the majority of people, just day-to-day activities, working in your garden or your yard, those are by far the best idea. And a hat, a light hat that won't seal heat in. I'm not talking about like a toboggan, okay? I'm talking about a light hat that allows some sweating of the head, but keeps sun off of you.
Sombrero, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Chinese
parasols and sombreros. I mean, we've answered the problem with those two.
All right. Well, hopefully we've answered some of your questions tonight. Thanks to Holly Lyles, Injury Prevention Coordinator with University Health. Also, thanks to Mary Alice Roundtree, Executive Director for the Caddo Council on Aging, as well as thanks to Dr. Shane Barton. He is the Director of Sports Medicine with the Willis-Knighton Health System. As you know, Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. It is not, if you have Health Matters, you should consult your physician. Would also like to thank Mr. Wally Derleth, Henry Edwards, and Tim Snell, as well as Renee Moran for producing the show tonight. Views and opinions expressed here tonight on Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Support of this program comes from the Noel Foundation, as well as from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.